Welcome to another episode of Fresh from the Hill, Inside Stories of Noteworthy Cornellians. My name is Lou Diamond, CEO of Thrive, host of Thrive Loud, class of 92, proud supporter of the Big Red, and your host of today's episode. Today on Fresh from the Hill, we are featuring Jack Mason, a master sommelier at the Pappas Brothers Steakhouse in Houston, Texas. He achieved his Master Sommelier status at the very young age of 27 and is one of the youngest to do so. He's one of 9 esteemed Master Sommeliers currently in the state of Texas and one of 144 Master Sommeliers in the United States. Mason has been featured in Forbes' annual 30 Under 30 list of outstanding young professionals nationwide, in Zagat's 30 Under 30 list in New York City, and was named Wine and Spirits Best New Sommelier in 2015. He was also featured in the series Uncorked. He was born in Biloxi, Mississippi, and now resides in Houston, Texas. I'd like all the listeners to welcome the Jack Mason. How are you, Jack?
I'm great, man. Thank you so much for having me.
So to all the listeners, we recorded this session early in the morning. And as you can imagine, someone who is in the restaurant business doesn't usually do early in the morning. So we do appreciate you coming on here. We've added an extra spice or a kick into the coffee so that he can actually be a little bit more up for the day. And I think it would be great for our listeners to get an understanding a little bit about you. I am fascinated personally with Master Sommeliers. I think I've understood how hard it is to become one. And I think our listeners would love to hear a little bit of your journey. Let's take it from school into your professional career to really get an understanding of what you've been up to. And coming from you comes much better than me reading a bio. So why don't you take it away, Jack?
Awesome, man. Well, yeah. So my journey started in operations and in the back of house when I was in high school. I was working in some kitchens and got really into it and was suggested that if this is what I professionally wanted to do, which was cook, that I should go seek out culinary school at the CIA. So I did that with the intention of that being my full education. So doing both the associates and the bachelor's program there. I actually had no idea about the Cornell hospitality program. So I did my associates, and halfway through that program, there's a very intensive wines class. And it was there that my first hint, kind of being bitten by the wine bug was then, because I could finally see the beauty of what wine could do on a table, its interaction with food, but also just like the limitless amount of things there were to pursue and understand, because, every year there's a new vintage and every year there's a new wine from all over the world. So that started my kind of joy and desire to learn more about wine. And I also then kind of learned about Cornell. I had some people that we were just sitting around lunch table, and two friends were going to go drive up to Ithaca. And I was like, well, what are you guys doing up there? And they're like, well, we're going to go interview to see if we can get into the hospitality program at Cornell for the bachelor's program. So I was like, never heard of that, but that's cool. Y'all have fun. We'll talk later. And then as I started to look into it after that, I was like, whoa, that's awesome. Cornell sounds like a really cool place that I would love to go check out. And so, eventually made my journey to get up there. And, at first I did not get into Cornell my first semester or the first time I applied. So I finished the culinary program, moved down to Texas. I go to a local junior college near College Station, Texas. And I had one goal, and that was I wanted to go to Cornell. I knew that that's what I needed to do to, kind of further myself and meet the right people and just get connected in a way that I wouldn't maybe have done at the CIA by itself. So I did that. I applied again, and I think I must be some funny statistic of sending someone from a junior college to an Ivy League university. But it was great, and I was super, super honored and proud to get in, and I got to hit the ground running. And so, going in as a transfer student, I kind of floated between all the classes and floated between kind of the years of students. And so had a little bit more of a different experience, but really, you know, coming in a little bit, not as a freshman, but as like knowing what I wanted to do and having a focus, I was able to just drill down and do all the beverage management classes and, you know, end up becoming the head TA for the wines class. And, you know, just got to focus on what I already knew what I wanted to do, and that was wine. So that's where that kind of...
I want to jump in here because this is really interesting. So you knew that you were interested in the hospitality and food and get an understanding of wine. By the way, wines at Cornell, one of my favorite classes of all time. It also helped, I think, at the time I dated the TA, and she ended up bringing home all the extras every day, which was a wonderful thing for, you know, college seniors who, whether they appreciated wine or not, it didn't really make a difference.
Yeah,
this is an interesting thing, though. But to understand and know wines is one thing. Was it even further, I guess, stimulated in you to recognize that specifically wines was the area that you wanted to drill down and focus in on?
When I first got there, I still was kind of like, I don't know, I really loved the kitchen and that sort of thing. But it was at Cornell that I ended up meeting a master sommelier, like actually like getting to spend some time with him. It was Greg Harrington from Gramercy Cellars. He would come and do HEC each year at Hotel Ezra Cornell. And, you know, I just kind of was like, hey, man, I know you're here for a few days. So if you have some time to grab some coffee or just, you know, connect, I would just love to pick your brain for a while. And he was gracious and said, of course, man, let's go grab some lunch. And, you know, we had an incredible conversation. And I was like, okay, I want to be you. I want to be a master sommelier. So, you know, it was funny at CIA, we would do these little, like, you know, just little bio things on different aspects of the industry. And I remember someone doing one on the Court of Master Sommeliers and becoming a master sommelier. And I'd be like, there's no way in the world I will ever be one of those people. And, you know, then I ended up getting to kind of have a real touch point of someone. And, you know, Greg really helped spur me on and, you know, help me get connected. During school, you know, I got to take my intro and certified while I was still at school. So that helped. I took it right when I turned 21. So it set me up on a path to help get into everything else a little bit quicker, you know. And it was Greg who was instrumental in helping me kind of ground myself along with another master sommelier, Drew Hendricks, in Texas after school, you know. So it was the relationships built at Cornell that really helped me say that this is a path that I want to go down to.
Okay. So Jack, now I'm going to get into the details here. I want you to help the listeners better understand what is entailed to become a master sommelier. And I recognize that it's not only the effort and the knowledge, but there also is, I guess, a specific skill or your own makeup that you have to have the ability to recognize these tastes. If you could share with the listeners a little bit about how you trained to become a master sommelier and what is entailed.
Right. So the programming is four levels, right? So the intro, certified, advanced, and then the master sommelier exam. So you have to work your way through each one to get up to the masters, which you ultimately have to be invited to. So throughout that, there's multiple sections of theory, which, you know, start off as multiple choice questions, then get into some handwritten, you know, fill in the blank. And then once you get to the master's level, it's a verbal exam, which is totally crazy because I've never done that before in my life. So there's that piece of that. And then there's the tasting portion, which, you know, by the end of it, it's six wines in 25 minutes. And what you're trying to get down to is the grape, where it came from, kind of its level of quality and what year it came from. So it's kind of drilling down. We call it the deductive tasting process, because really what you're trying to do is take away what it's not to focus in on what it is. So you're really using logic and deduction to help really narrow in and focus on what's in the glass. And so that's a lot of fun. And then then the last piece is service. And that's what kind of differentiates the court a little bit from maybe the master of wine, just because we are a service focused accreditation. So, you know, a big piece of it is how do you handle the table? How do you handle decanting or sparkling wine opening or cocktails or, all of the alcoholic beverages. And so, so there's three parts, and at the advanced, you're taking all three parts, and then at the master's, you're doing them as well, and just on a much deeper and higher level. So I guess your question more specifically was about tasting and developing that kind of catalog. Well, you know, really it is exactly that. It's just developing the theory behind wine, of understanding what grapes will in a textbook, Riesling or Sauvignon Blanc or Chardonnay, there are inherent traits to those grape varietals that you learn to understand and to develop, and then you add the layers of actually tasting all of those sorts of things and building a database in your brain of what do these things taste like, how do they act, do they traditionally have sugar, do they not have sugar, do they get oak, do they not get oak? So there's a lot of theory that goes into it behind it, and then you apply obviously your tasting to that to come to a logical decision of how to narrow down the world. So, and that takes forever, and people have easier or harder times with it. For me, I had to take the tasting portion 3 times. And so ultimately when I got to my third exam, which once you're on the clock, which means you've got a piece of the exam, you have 2 more tries after that. So this is my second of those 2 tries. So if I had not passed, I would have reset, gone back to 0, and had to start over the master's exam. So a lot of pressure, but it was, it just took me a long time to finally develop the confidence in saying, look, I know I can taste wine, and I'm going to sit here and I'm going to tell you what these 6 wines are, guys. So that's what ultimately got me through on the master's exam. So, but yeah, tasting is crazy.
Impressive. I was going to say it's impressive. And first of all, I do recognize how difficult this is, and to have done it by 27 is fairly amazing. Maybe you could help also share with the listeners a sense of, maybe dispel some rumors here or some thoughts. The wine community, maybe it's because, you know, there's always the battles between New World and Old World and French and Italian and what they think of Americans. But the wine community itself, everyone has this image of those that are involved as whether sommeliers or even winemakers as maybe, I don't know, a little snooty or a little above of how certain things are. Here we have somebody, by the way, who you couldn't get more grounded. We got somebody from Biloxi, Mississippi, who lives in Texas, who is in this wine community. Can you share with the listeners here really what's behind the scene in this world of sommeliers and this world of wine and these winemakers, your perception maybe going in or what it really is like?
Well, you know, perception going in is definitely that is what I think was a thing more so. Today it's still a thing, but it's much less so. And, you know, I know within the court, like, we really are championing hospitality, you know, and I got to work with Danny Meyer. And so, you know, the king of hospitality and really just it's all about service these days, you know, and that's ultimately what drew me into wanting to continue with the court and with restaurants and those such things is, you know, for me being able to be the link between the kitchen, the wine, and the entire experience is really, it's really, really cool because, you know, when I was in the back of house, you get to create a dish and maybe see that dish come back and the plate be empty or not be empty, right? But as a sommelier, I get to maybe help direct them on what to order. I get to help pair wines with their meal or not. And, you know, I ultimately get to help direct their entire experience and see the whole thing through. And so, and then ultimately get to see the joy that all can bring. And so for me, that's what all drew me into wanting to do this. And so I think hospitality is championed a lot more today. And I think that the snootiness, people are, they're over it, you know, like, yeah, it's, yeah. I don't think in the industry people like that. So especially when you're coming to be taken care of by someone, you know, so.
How often do you, obviously, for those who are familiar with the restaurant industry, and by the way, you mentioned some of the Danny Meyer restaurants, I've been to them, and your description there, the sommelier at these restaurants truly does make the dining experience unbelievable, helping to not only educate you what goes great with the meal, but it really, as I think the best word I've ever heard about it, it accentuates every component of what you're having, and it really does add to the dining experience. And I guess this is a good question. You need to educate yourself constantly because there's new product coming out all the time. So how much of your time is actually spent educating yourself, getting to meet many of the wine suppliers? What's that experience like for you at the restaurant that you're at? Or is it something that you need to seek out individually to make sure that you're in touch with all the new product that's coming?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, that question is always asked like, oh, is there CEs or, you know, continuing education? And, you know, there's not, but to be honest, the day I passed, I never felt more, you know, required to know knowledge than I ever had in my life. And so, every day is continuing education. So, you know, we meet with suppliers, you know, a couple times a week. We do trade tastings, we study, you know, just what's kind of going on, being connected with wine industry news and those sorts of things. So, you know, it's a daily pursuit because you're right, it's a juggernaut. Like every single year, every single day, there's new things happening. And so just trying to keep up with it and, you know, stay relevant and those sorts of things. So.
Great. So this is the question that I recently had in a conversation with someone that is a chef. Because their cooking is their job, it's not a hobby, and it almost becomes work. In fact, the big joke is that the chef actually would take time to have someone prepare them a meal because the last thing they want to do is start cooking something for themselves. Let's spin this a little bit into your world, okay? You are constantly tasting and trying to figure out what the best wine is for that particular meal or for someone's dining experience. How does it relate to how you enjoy wine today? Does it change the way that you perceive a glass of wine for pure enjoyment for yourself?
I mean, I guess yes and no. Like at the end of the day, you know, there's times when you've tasted so many wines, you're like, okay, I just need a beer. Like I'm done with this acid and, you know, tannin and structure, like give me a beer. But, you know, definitely like, I think, as you taste a lot of wine, you enjoy more subtlety than you like kind of loud noise. You know, it's always my theory with people as they get into wine, like they want the big, maybe California style of very oaked, rich Cabernet, because, you know, when you are still trying to tease out all of the things that are in wine, you want them to the volume to be turned really high up, right? So you can say, oh, that's what oak tastes like. Oh, that's what really, you know, fruit forward tastes like. That's what, you know, powerful tannins taste like. And, you know, as you drink more and more wine, all I want is light, unoaked, very crisp styles of you know, light, my favorite thing in the whole wide world, champagne. So I think, you know, my enjoyment has turned more to subtlety and just quaffability many a time. And I just want something just easier and refreshing a lot. But, you know, I don't know if I would say I wouldn't drink a glass of wine, you know, because I get to taste it every day. But, you know, it's different. You know, for a chef, they're creating something. We pull a cork, so it's a little different.
It's so true. I just joke about the fact that I would imagine there is a weird pressure that must be on you. Like if you got invited to a dinner party on a personal level, like, and you're going to bring a bottle of wine, this is almost along the lines of that person on the other end actually knows, well, Jack is bringing a bottle of wine. We know it's got to be a good one. So,
well, yeah, I mean, but you know, good's relative. It doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, expensive exactly. Like that, but you know, it's going to be delicious either way.
Right. Well played. So let's do this. I love asking guests that I interview this question. And when you have trouble thriving in your life or your passion, which in this particular case seems to be both, when you have trouble thriving, who or what practice do you turn to get back on the thriving track?
Huh. Interesting. Well, you know, for me, you know, religion is definitely a piece of my life and, you know, church and my family, and those sorts of things are all sources of inspiration. But, you know, ultimately, I think at this point, it's just trying to continue to drive and thrive for my family. You know, I have a 15-month-old daughter now, and, you know, so I definitely look at the world a little bit differently, and how can I enrich the life and the environment for her that is now our reality.
Great, great answer, and close to home.
Absolutely.
Jack, give the listeners here a big goal for you. Obviously, you're already a master sommelier, and obviously there is an expertise to that. What would you like to do to continue to move onward and upward in your career and your life? Some big goals that maybe you have personally as it relates to your career?
Well, you know, I think ultimately, so kitchen is still a passion of mine. I love it. And I love the front of house. And I think bringing that all together and having ownership of some sort, that idea of what that is still floating around, you know, but, you know, right. Having ownership of some sort, because the reality is being in the hospitality industry tied to restaurants as that kind of level, you know, there's only so much that, you know, a few restaurants can do. And so eventually the only way to grow beyond kind of the limits of working for someone else is to have ownership. And so that's the long-term goal of being able to do that. And, you know, I've been given a lot of great education, whether it be from culinary school or from Cornell or from real life work experience working for, you know, Danny Meyer and Michael White and now the Pappas family. So being able to capitalize on that and, you know, create an environment where people can come and hang out and just enjoy themselves. You know, that was one of the greatest joys I had in New York, was getting to open Marta with Danny Meyer, because it was the first place that like my friends could come more than once a year, you know, and sit down and have a slice of pizza, pop a bottle of champagne and just hang out. And so if I can recreate that for myself one day, I think that's the ultimate goal.
That's great. And some spectacular mentors along the way to really help guide you. And that's not a bad avenue to reach out to if you ever need it, which is awesome to have great connections in life. So Jack, give us some of the plugs and places that people can find you or the locations that you're at, just so that you have a little bit of an understanding of how to connect with Jack. And it always comes better when coming from you. So if you could share that and any social media or anything like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously I work with the Pappas Brothers Steakhouse. So we have two in Houston, one in Dallas, and I get to spend most of my time in Houston and go up to Dallas once a month-ish, but you'll see me pop around there. And then obviously with the court of Master Sommeliers and also the Guild of Sommeliers, just helping with exams and, lectures and those sorts of things, get to bounce around the country. And so there's always some fun opportunities to see people around the country with the court. It's been one of the fun things about passing, is just getting to be given an avenue and an outlet to see the country and see what's going on, and also connect with people around the country. So that's been good. And as far as social media, I'm on Twitter and Instagram is at J.A. Mason III. My legal name is John Albert Mason III. So that's where that came from. wait, yeah.
Jam three. I like that, by the way. Was that taken?
I had to do J.A. Mason.
Fair enough. Very cool. And thank you for sharing. Okay. So now some fun questions here, just because we have the opportunity and time to do it. Back to your days at Cornell. Hot Truck or Louis?
You know, what's funny is I never did either until I came back, and Hot Truck.
Okay, there you go. I'm said. And if it's Hot Truck, any specific sandwich you like that you prefer?
Man, I don't even know. I just get like the pizza one. Well, I don't know what that's called.
That's the PMP. You got it. The poor man's pizza. Well played. All right. So now, what's your all-time favorite movie?
Oh, jeez. Well, if I would have to say the one I've seen the most frequently because I enjoyed it the most was probably The Goonies.
I was expecting Sideways to come out of reason, but I guess.
No, I gotta, not be the norm, right?
That's great. And I guess maybe the last thing, you had such a great experience, obviously, at Cornell, and you also obviously have brought it into a great career. Words of advice, as someone who is a young alumni from Cornell, to people who are looking to pursue areas of hospitality or your field, as something that you would love to give back, just a quick message or word to those that might want to follow a similar path.
Well, I think Cornell, we have a great job of kind of really helping students be prepared and be ready to step into the world. But I think that we also need to remember that it's just a foot in the door, not you're opening the door, and so humility and understanding, like, hey, there's still a lot more to learn. You have a great base to build from. I think the kind of the business oriented aspect of the way the hospitality school was and hotel school is really set me up for long term success, and those skills got to be used in different ways throughout my adventure to life thus far. But, I often, especially in New York, I think that young alumni think that they should, be the wine director right away or whatever, be the person in charge right away. There's still a lot to glean from working through maybe taking that server/sommelier position, then getting the sommelier position, and then ultimately becoming a wine director, having mentors along the way, because there's a lot of underwritten, just great techniques and things that you'll only really learn from working under some people and working under different people, just like at culinary school, we got taught 3-4 ways to do the same thing. And, they always suggested when you go stage in the kitchen to see how they do it, right? So you can build your Rolodex of the 10 different ways to, do whatever, and then you get to choose which one works best for you. And so I think having a similar aspect with learning the business and learning hospitality is very crucial, because then you can make it your own, whatever way you see fit.
Great. Great advice, great words, and congratulations on all your success, man. This has been pretty impressive what you've done so far, and I think the whole world is excited to see what comes next.
I really appreciate you having me.
That's great. And to all our listeners out there, thank you for joining us on Fresh from the Hill. I'm Lou Diamond, reminding you to stay connected and go Big Red. Music from Fresh from the Hill was written, produced, and recorded by Kia Albertson Rogers, class of 2014. You can contact him at koa3@cornell.edu.